हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सहवीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्तिश्शान्तिश्शान्तिः ॐ जया श्रीकृष्णचैतन्यप्रभुनित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिवसरि गौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे। जय। So now on Yudhishthira's moral instructions. So Draupadi's been asking different questions, basically. The aspects about, we're doing good, then we're in the forest, Duryodhan is bad, why he's on the throne. Standard kind of questions that people ask when things go negative for them. When things go positive, no one asks about free will and predestiny and all that. If out of nowhere you just suddenly, get a landfall of something, you get some money or some good fortune, no one asks, why is this coming to me? Why is this good fortune being forced upon me? It wasn't my free will. I didn't choose it. Why is it working? No, we only do that if it's not the way we like it. So the point is, but these are very important points. So then she's bringing it up and everything, and then we get the benefit of hearing, what Yudhishthira Maharaj's answers are, because she was looking at it that the Kshatriyas, they should fight. But the Yudhishthira's point was, is that yes, we're Kshatriyas, but there's higher principles there, that of forgiveness and all these different things, because now is not the time for war anyway. We've been there, it's been authorized, and we've taken this vow, so we're doing this. But when we go back, because the vow was, is we go to the forest, when we come back, we get the kingdom back. They don't give the kingdom back, which Yudhishthira says, I doubt. Then there'll be fight, like that. Yudhishthira could see that his wife was bewildered by grief and sorrow. O gentle lady, born from sacrifice, although your speech is sweet and well articulated, it is atheistic. Right? So here, as we can see, is she's saying very strong points, but she's saying it sweetly. She's saying it, very nicely, proper words, everything like that. And so he's praising her for her glorious position and that. So you see, this is, a very nice way the conversation goes on. None should ever perform virtue with a desire to gain its fruits. Such a sinful trader of virtue will soon reap the result, will never reap the results. I practice virtue only because I desire to follow the Vedas and satisfy the Lord. The Vedas state that he who doubts virtue will be born among the brutes. He who doubts religion, virtue, and the words of the rishis is excluded from the regions of immortality and bliss. Such a person is considered lower than a thief. Right? So you're performing your duties because of it should be done. And then for the materialist, they have it with that attitude, but they have the ultimate desire to getting the material benefit. That's how they'll get. By that austerity, then they'll get in the future. Then if someone wants liberation, it's by performing those duties without the attachment, then they'll get liberation. But as he pointed out, as for devotees, then he's performing the activity, his duties in that without attachment to please the Lord. And that will get you bhakti. That will actually take you out of the material world and into the spiritual world. Draupadi bowed her head as her husband continued. O thin-waisted lady, you have seen with your own eyes the results of virtue in such immortal sages as Markandeya, Vyasa, Vyasadeva, Maitreya, and the celestial sage Narada. All these shining and ever blissful rishis describe virtue as the foremost duty. If the pieties practiced by the virtuous bore no fruit, then this world would long ago have been covered by darkness. Because if people perform all good work, if it didn't give good results, then everything would have been destroyed and been very, very, undeveloped, a long time ago. None would have pursued liberation nor cared for to acquire knowledge or even wealth, because if you perform the activity, you don't get it, they wouldn't do it. All men would have lived like beasts, and the world would be thrown into confusion. The Brahmins, who had now also come to hear Yudhishthira's speech, nodded in agreement. Darkness had set in, and fires now burned in the great clearing where they sat. Draupadi could hear the flames crackling as well as the sounds of crickets as Yudhishthira continued. Do not doubt virtue because you do not see its results, punctually. Without doubt, the fruits will manifest in time, as will the fruits of sin. The fruits of true virtue are eternal and indestructible, because true virtue means what he does on behalf of the Lord. That gives an eternal result of bhakti, leading one to the highest regions of happiness, right, the transcendental realm. Therefore, do not speak ill of God. Try to understand the Supreme Being and his desires. O Draupadi, always bow to him. This will be for your own good. Right? So you see, is she's asked very nicely, but strong points. He's also giving, because he said, you know, your points were atheistic. But he points it out also very nicely. So the whole thing is not impassioned. And because of this, you can have very nice discussions, get right to the heart of things like that. And you don't get distracted by somebody said something in the wrong way, in the wrong tone, like that. Tears fell from Draupadi's eyes. She knew her husband's words were true. Surely God was infallible and always the well-wishing friend of all living beings. But who could understand God? His activities were inscrutable, right? Because he's beyond the modes. We're working with the modes, so we can't understand him. But he reveals himself through the scripture. So in that way, then we understand. No one can understand his plans. The apparent reversal of the virtuous Pandavas, and even the reversal had seemingly come through Yudhishthira's own inexplicable actions, was incomprehensible and quite incredible. Draupadi sighed. I accept what you have said. O best of men, the Lord has certainly bestowed upon all beings the fruits of their own work. Even if some sudden calamity or good fortune befalls us, we must understand it to be the results of some action in a former life. But besides destiny, there's exertion, right? So you have the destiny, which is the result of previous exertion, but you have your exertion now. So someone then performs their proper duties now without attachment. They put in that effort, and in the future, they'll get the good results from that. And as he pointed out, if somehow or another we're not getting good results now, we can only understand that in a former life we've done something that wasn't proper. We've made our exertion there towards something improper. And that therefore, then we got the results now. But if you continue in this way, then those results will come. Just like Duryodhana, he's gotten all this nice facility and all that. And that's coming because he's performed the some good activities in the past, same with Karna and all these. But because they're using it now for sinful, they will get the result of the sinful. Because the previous activity is simply giving a situation, right? It's not dynamic, it's just static, it's a situation. Then what you do with it, your exertion, that gives you the future. So what they're doing with it is sinful. And so because of that, then it will all fall apart. A man who does not exert himself will eventually be ruined. I feel you should exert yourself now to... wait a minute. Where did this go? Okay, this is Draupadi speaking. Okay, even if some sudden calamity or good fortune befalls us, we must understand to be the results of some action in a former life. So she understands it. But besides destiny, there's exertion. So she's saying, okay, we've done that. Now we should apply ourselves. Man who does not exert himself will eventually be ruined. I feel you should exert yourself now to recover your kingdom. Even if you fail, you will at least have satisfied everyone that you did all that human endeavor can accomplish. Although the results are not in our hands, we should still perform our work, right? So she's using the point is we should make the effort, and if we don't get the results, well, at least we've tried. Because it's all up to you know, the Supreme. It's all up to the Lord. The wise always condemn inaction. So she's taking, he's performing inaction. But he's taking it, no, we're in this situation. This situation, we do the best we can, which is now to improve our piety, improve our God consciousness, and, you know, live out our vow. Why then do you remain inactive? This is my doubt, right? She's just saying he's inactive. And he's saying he's active in performing his duties. Draupadi fell silent. Then, stirred by her words, Bhima felt impelled to speak. He too was angry and found the forest almost unbearable. Right? Not because they liked the forest. They grew up in the forest. They were born in the forest. So that's not the problem for them. What bothers him is that Yudhishthira Maharaj should be on the throne. Duryodhan is there. You know, they've taken everything that they, you know, did so many nice things for. And, you know, that they could serve the Brahmins in so many nice ways. Now they also get to serve Brahmins, but there they could do it in a much broader fashion. So in that way, then he finds it that it's a difficulty. It was not the austerity he minded, but thought of Duryodhana and his brothers enjoying their ill-gotten gains. Because it's just unjust, and kings take care of this to make things balanced. Why did Yudhishthira suffer in silence? Draupadi was right. It was time for them to act. Bhima burst out. Oh, Yudhishthira, what do you hope to gain by living like an ascetic? You are not a yogi, but a king. You should walk the path of kings. Duryodhana robbed you of your kingdom. He is like a weak, offal-eating jackal stealing the prey of lions. How do you tolerate it? How can you abandon the wealth that was both our source of virtue and pleasure in exchange for this trifling virtue called keeping your promise, right? Because he made a promise. So Bhima's point is that that's a small point, but there's a bigger injustice. So there's this huge injustice of how Duryodhana behaved. And then this small point that he said he'll follow his authorities. But so he's taking it that that's small, this is big, we should do the bigger. You know, it may not be perfect, but at least it will be the path walked by kings, and no one would complain. You know, factually they wouldn't, because that's what most kings do. But you see, as Yudhishthira stands out, and this story is valid today, because no, he followed his duties, what he had planned. He followed his authorities. And so because of that, that's why eventually then it all works out in his favor. Yudhishthira remained calm while Bhima vented his long pent-up anger, right? Because, you know, he's been there, I think, some months now, and all this is there in his head, and so now it's all got an opportunity to come out. And so he's letting it all, let everyone say what they want to say, and then it will be dealt with. The forest reverberated with his words, his voice as deep and powerful as a kettle drum. O king, it is only due to your carelessness that we lost our kingdom. Only to please you did we allow Duryodhana and his brothers to wrest from us our wealth and afflict us with such pain. On your command, we now pain our friends and enliven our enemies. Surely it was folly that we did not kill the Kauravas then and there. Instead, we have meekly come to this forest and act worthy only of weak men. Krishna does not approve, nor does Arjuna, the twins, or myself. O king, has your despair led you to lose your manliness on the plea of virtue? Only cowards cherish despair, being unable to win back what they have lost. Bhima argued that so-called virtue that produced calamity was not virtue at all. Right. So his point is, if by his following his authorities, then it's only produced calamity, he'll say, then that's not actually virtue at all, because virtue should... Virtue means you're performing the activity that gets the proper results, right? So you have eternal laws of nature, and those laws of nature then are given by Krishna. You follow them properly, you get proper results. And by following like here, then technically it appears he didn't get good results. And, you know, Krishna came himself and said, oh, if I had been there, then, you know, I would have taken care, but I was away, what could I do? And, you know, these kind of things. So the point is he's pointing out Krishna didn't really like it either. But at the same time is there is a plan that's there. Krishna has a plan. What use was virtue for its own sake? Kings should practice virtue to make their kingdoms prosperous and to achieve pleasure. All three things, virtue, profit, and pleasure, should be pursued equally. None of them should be sought at the cost of the others. Right? Because you perform virtue, but that naturally produces results, right? Artha, right? From dharma comes artha. And then from that, then it's used in your life. And to benefit yourself, benefit others, benefit the kingdom, all these different things. But if you only try to go for pleasure and use all that, then without virtue and profit, then you end up with no money. You only go for profit, then without virtue, how will you get it? And if you don't use it for pleasure, then... What was the point of having the facility? You know, and if you only do virtue and don't use the profit and pleasure, what's the point of the virtue? So they have to be balanced. But as Yudhishthira pointed out, these three are balanced by doing it without attachment. That gives moksha, but to please Krishna, so that gives bhakti. So the focus is on that bhakti part. None of them should be sought at the cost of the others. Have you lost sight of your proper duty? You are a powerful warrior supported by other powerful men. Use that power to regain your rightful kingdom. When you have established your rule, then acquire religious merit by ruling piously and giving charity to the Brahmins. Right? So he's saying, go back in, establish your kingdom, and then you rule it as you would properly. That's the virtuous point. You're ruling properly, you're giving in charity, you're maintaining the Brahmins, you're seeing to the proper social order and everything. By giving up this promise to stay in the forest, you will be casting aside an inferior principle for the greater good. So his point is that then, as kings, they're supposed to rule the kingdom. And by ruling the kingdom, that will be the greater good. And this vow that he has, you know, that he'll go to the forest because Dhritarashtra, you know, desired it. He's saying that's an inferior principle. Bhima softened, right? Because now he's said so many things, so now he can. The Brahmins and the people want you to rule them. They all despise Duryodhana, right? So he's not exaggerating here. They actually do. They have since that whole thing with what was it? You know, the house of lack, Varnabhata. They've disliked him since then. And because Yudhishthira came back and this and that, then you know they were pacified. But they just basically, as soon as Duryodhana was prominent and it was known who he was and his character, no one's liked him. You are capable of taking back your kingdom, and you have Arjuna and myself to help you. Who can withstand us in battle? Let us use strategy and strength to win back what is ours. This is our duty. Yudhishthira remained silent for some moments as he summoned patience, right? Because all these things are there, and the emotions and what they're saying, so he wants that patience, because when you have patience, you can explain it very nicely. He looked up at Bhima. O descendant of Bharata, I cannot reproach you for giving me pain with your arrow-like words. It is true that due to my folly, I have brought this calamity upon us. I knew I could not defeat Shakuni at dice, yet I allowed myself to be drawn into the game. Right, because the authority was sanctioning it, so then he went along with it. But if he had been looking at it more carefully, he wouldn't have agreed. Even if Dhritarashtra is desiring it, doesn't mean he has to follow it. I should have exerted greater control over myself. O Bhima, the mind cannot be controlled when it comes under the influence of manliness, pride, and prowess. Like before he said, you know, so have you given up your manliness? But he says when you come under that control of that manliness, you don't make proper decisions. I do not, because before it was he's been challenged to a game, and so therefore Kshatriyas always accept that challenge. I do not censure you for what you have said, but I do consider what has happened to us to be preordained. Yudhishthira made it clear that he would not break his promise. Do you recall the conditions of the final dice game? Shakuni said, he who loses this game shall go to the forest and remain there for 13 years. The winner shall take his kingdom and return it when the forest term has expired. I then uttered, so be it. Yudhishthira hung his head and fell silent as he remembered that day. What had overcome him? He had thought he was acting only for virtue, but as a result, all his loved ones had suffered. Still, he was resolute, right? Because they, in other words, there's no point in lamenting because it won't change anything. He's chosen that path, and so now he's going to go down that path. Because then you make the best of that path and then continue it until it comes to what you want. No matter how painful the present situation, there was no turning back. He would not abandon his promise. This agreement would be kept. Right? So Yudhishthira's made this promise, he's taken this vow, and because of that, now he's saying, no, this is what we should do. And so then, this is then the position at present. So we'll continue the discussion of Bhima in the next class. Om Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Srila Prabhupada ki.